the United States announces more military aid for Ukraine.
The President approved the latest tranche of U.S. assistance to Ukraine, valued up to $675 million.
While in Kyiv, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken announces even more assistance for the region.
To bolster the security of Ukraine and 18 other regional countries. These are Baltic and Eastern European countries, which the U.S. says it wants to help in the face of potential Russian aggression in the future.
And later in the program, Ukrainian forces continue their counteroffensives on multiple fronts. Today is Thursday, September 8th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said on Thursday that President Joe Biden has approved additional military aid for Ukraine.
In the weeks since the contact group last met, the United States has committed another $6.3 billion in security assistance to Ukraine. And yesterday, the President approved the latest tranche of U.S. assistance to Ukraine, valued up to $675 million.
VOA White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wiedekuswara joins us with the details. Patsy, can you kind of give us an overview of what this latest $675 million aid package is supposed to cover?
Yeah, so this includes money for howitzers, for munitions, Humvee vehicles, armored vehicles, including ambulances and anti-tank systems. So this is something that the Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin announced at the meeting in Germany with his fellow ministers of allied countries. And I'm also noting that Secretary of State Antony Blinken is now in Kyiv in a surprise visit, and he's expected to speak more about this aid package and to give more details on it.
I also want to ask you about the aid that the United States is providing Ukraine, because it was just a couple weeks ago, late August, that the United States announced $3 billion in additional long-term aid. It's widely expected that Secretary Blinken or perhaps other administration officials will announce another $2 billion in long-term aid. What exactly are these aid packages covering?
So the overall long-term goal is to bolster not just Ukraine's security, but also its neighbors, somewhere between a dozen to 18 neighbors in the area, countries in the area, rather, whether they're NATO members or non-NATO members, from the risk of potential Russian aggression. So really, a lot of the focus of these aid packages is long-term military deterrence, or as Secretary Austin calls it, you know, we're just in it for the long haul, and we'll continue to evolve as the fight evolves. So this is, again, for long-term security, long-term European security, and it seems like the Biden administration is set to continue its long-term commitment there.
And speaking of the long-term commitment that the Biden administration looks to be providing, can you give us a brief rundown as to how much the Biden administration has pledged so far to Ukraine's aid? And I guess, really, is there still some widespread bipartisan support to continue this, since we're well over the $10 billion mark?
Right. So right now, you're right. We have pledged $13.5 billion in security assistance to Ukraine since the invasion on February 24th on the part of Russia. And this is part of the $40 billion aid package that was passed by Congress in May. So this is a massive, massive, massive commitment. And out of the $13.5 billion, hundreds of millions of aid has already been dispersed. And to your question, will there be continued support? Well, at this point, polling shows that a majority of Americans still believe that the U.S. should continue to support Ukraine in the war. And until that changes, we can expect continued bipartisan support in Congress. However, I do want to note that there have been recent calls by some members of Congress for better oversight of the money, of the funding. So we'll see, in the next weeks or months how the conflict develops, and with it, whether there's going to be any change in, public polling on this issue. And of course, that depends on numerous issues, and we really just can't predict it at this point.
Patsy Wiedekuswara is VOA's White House Bureau Chief. Patsy, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Speaking to reporters, U.S. General Mark Milley provided updates on how Kyiv was using previously provided aid.
The United States has provided almost 500,000 rounds of 155 artillery as an example. The United States has made a significant commitment, but so have the other countries. All of the countries are providing and according to their need, and Ukraine is being well supplied with all of the systems needed to defend themselves. We are seeing real and measurable gains from Ukraine in the use of these systems. For example, the Ukrainians have struck over 400 targets with the HIMARS, and they've had devastating effect. Russian lines of communication and supply channels are severely strained.
Secretary Austin expanded upon those remarks.
The Ukrainians have put to use, good use, the equipment that we've provided them, and we see those effects on the battlefield as we speak. HIMARS are one example, but there are other examples as well. Ukrainians have inflicted significant damage to the Russian supply lines and ammunition supply points and command and control nodes as they continue to shape the battlefield to be able to maneuver to retake some of their sovereign territory.
And added this after meeting with several defense ministers at Ramstein Air Base in Germany.
We had some good conversations today about Ukraine's self-defense priorities. Right now, Ukraine urgently needs more artillery systems and ammunition. It also needs air defense and coastal defense and other critical capabilities. The United States has stepped up to meet those needs, and I'm very glad that so many of our allies and partners have as well.
Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken made an unscheduled visit to Kyiv on Thursday, and VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has those details.
Yeah, that's right, Steve. Well, the State Department, this trip was definitely wrapped in secrecy, of course, because of the very serious, very grave security concerns. And then we see there is Secretary Blinken on the ground. He met with injured boys and girls at a children's hospital and brought stuffed animals for them. And also at that hospital, there was an appearance by the famous Ukrainian dog, Patron, the mind-sniffing dog, and Blinken had some dog treats for him. And then, of course, there were more serious meetings with Ukrainian Foreign Minister Kuleba and President Zelensky.
We know this is a pivotal moment. More than 6 months into Russia's war of aggression against Ukraine, as your counteroffensive is now underway and proving effective. That is, of course, mostly a function of the incredible bravery, resilience of Ukrainians. We see that on the battlefield every day. We're so pleased that we've been able to support your efforts, and we'll continue to do so.
This was a very strong show of continued American support. As you said, Defense Secretary Austin had announced the $675 million more in ammunition and in weapons and in DOD equipment going to Ukraine. And Secretary Blinken announced another more than $2 billion, as you said, which he's going to notify Congress of, to bolster the security of Ukraine and 18 other regional countries. These are Baltic and Eastern European countries, which the U.S. says it wants to help in the face of potential Russian aggression in the future.
Now, Cindy, this, as we mentioned, was an unannounced trip because of security concerns. Do we have anything else that we can report on in terms of what the Secretary hopes to achieve while there in Ukraine?
As you know, and your audience likely knows, this trip is coming at what U.S. officials are terming another perhaps critical turning point in the war, which has been going on, depending on how you count it, at least almost 7 months now since the full Russian invasion. And Ukraine is announcing also significant victories in their counteroffensive, especially in the south, saying they've retaken 20 villages and are have gone like 50 kilometers into Russian lines. Now, this has not been independently confirmed, but we are definitely seeing some very significant Ukrainian military victories. And I think that there's no accident that this another visit by Secretary Blinken is coming at this time with even more support. And we know that things are likely to get a little tougher, especially in countries in Europe with the very critical energy situation coming up in the winter. So we know that the U.S. is going to really have a bit of a juggling act, but they are going to be very, very strong on persuading their allies to keep up the support for Ukraine and to keep up restriction on energy from Russia.
Cindy Sain is VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent covering the State Department. Cindy, thank you very much for your time.
Okay, sure, Steve, anytime.
In its latest assessment, the Institute for the Study of War asserts Ukrainian forces are likely exploiting Russian troop redeployment efforts to achieve successes on the ground. From Kyiv, we're joined by reporter Anna Chernikova.
President Zelensky previously said that Ukrainian counteroffensive actions are not only happening in the south, but he's not going to give any details because this is a surprise for Russian forces, as he put it. So yesterday evening, we found out that actually Kharkiv region is also under active counteroffensive actions by the Ukrainian forces. So basically, we have south front line and east front line, but not only Donbas, but also Kharkiv. So according to the Institute for the Study of War, Ukrainian forces advanced at least 20 kilometers forward and regained at least 400 square kilometers of territory in the Kharkiv region. Also, President Zelensky confirmed that, saying that there are positive news coming from Kharkiv region. However, no details are available yet, and General Staff also said that no details would be provided until the territory is cleared from the Russian forces. But again, we hear a lot from the local medias and also locals who are located in the area that what we're talking about is Balaklia, which is very close to Izum, also another village next to Balaklia. So basically, we're talking about Izum direction. And similar information is coming from Russian media resources because what we see in the past day that Russian resources are also reporting on activization of the Ukrainian counteroffensive actions in the Kharkiv region. In terms of the south front line, in the south, Ukrainian military carried out, this is according to the Ukrainian armed forces, Ukrainian military carried out more than 370 fire missions. We have reports that Ukrainian forces killed more than 100 Russian soldiers in the past day and destroyed numerous artillery systems, including Grad and S-400, as well as other military equipment and ammunition depots.
And Anna, as I understand it, there's also been some reported shelling in civilian areas.
We also have some bad news from the city of Kharkiv and the city of Kryvyi Rih because very heavy shelling happened in those areas. Over the night, we received information about the shelling of the city of Kharkiv. And just now, a couple of hours ago, it was a shelling of the Kryvyi Rih, and we don't have any details yet.
Reporting for us from Kyiv, Ukraine, reporter Anna Chernikova. Anna, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
For additional updates on the war throughout the day, please visit voanews.com/flashpoint. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. A senior UN human rights official says that her office has verified that Russian soldiers and affiliated groups subject Ukrainian civilians to an invasive process called filtration and call for access to those being detained by Russia. Elise Brands-Karas told the UN Security Council that individuals subjected to filtration include those leaving areas of ongoing or recent hostilities and those residing in or moving through territory controlled by Russian armed forces and affiliated armed groups.
There have been credible allegations of forced transfers of unaccompanied children to Russian-occupied territory or to the Russian Federation itself. We are concerned that the Russian authorities have adopted a simplified procedure to grant Russian citizenship to children without parental care, and that these children would be eligible for adoption by Russian families. Under Article 50 of the Fourth Geneva Convention, the Russian Federation is prohibited from changing these children's personal status, including nationality.
Margaret Bashir is VOA's UN correspondent. Margaret, I guess where I want to begin is with U.S. Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield, who really did not hold back in her remarks to the council.
Estimates from a variety of sources, including the Russian government, indicate that Russian authorities have interrogated, detained, forcibly deported between 900,000 and 1.6 million Ukrainian citizens from their homes to Russia, often to isolated regions in the Far East. And I want to be clear, the United States has information that officials from Russia's presidential administration are overseeing and coordinating these filtration operations. And we are further aware that Russian presidential administration officials are providing lists of Ukrainians to be targeted for filtration and receiving reports on the scope and the progress of operations. Filtered. The word does not begin to convey the horror and the depravity of these premeditated policies.
Yes, she kind of described the process of filtration, what happens to people when they're sort of, you know, stopped at checkpoints, taken from their cars, interrogated, sometimes tortured. And, you know, they're just going about their business, most of them, and then they're disappeared. And she attributed this whole so-called filtration process to getting, you know, that she said Russia is trying to get rid of people, or, you know, push aside people who might challenge their legitimacy in Ukraine or impair their ability to take more territory. And she said, you know, why are they doing this? Why are they carrying out these filtration activities? And she said, the reason is simple. It's to prepare for annexation, that they want to attempt to annex bigger chunks of Ukraine.
What about other members on the council? Because as this war has progressed, there have been nations around the world who have taken a more neutral approach.
You know, of the 15 council members, there was a decent number who really just avoided the topic altogether. And like from the Chinese ambassador, the Indian ambassador, the Brazilian ambassador, we just sort of heard generic comments about the war should end. Humanitarian assistance needs to be given to civilians. The Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant should not be bombed. You know, so there were some in the council who were just sort of avoiding the topic altogether.
You know, one person who was not avoiding the topic altogether was the Russian envoy, heard here through an interpreter.
As for the so-called filtration, first of all, we don't really understand what is being talked about here, because the very term filtration doesn't have a clear definition in international humanitarian law. If we're talking about identifying among those people who want to come to Russia, Ukrainian citizens who are fighters of the nationalist battalions or Ukrainian army soldiers who participated in crimes against the civilian population, then that's normal practice for any army around the world.
Yes, he said it was like a horror movie. They were that the American ambassador was telling the plot of some horror movie. And he was like, what's the name of this horror movie? Because we haven't seen it before. And he said he kind of acknowledged a bit that they are filtering people, saying that where people have been in the military or committed crimes, they're being vetted like in any country. But then of the other people, he said, oh, they're living freely and voluntarily in Russia. You know, nobody is preventing them moving around or leaving the country, or in you know, they're in Russia or in Russian-occupied parts of Ukraine, to be more precise. And he said, you know, really, do you think that we could keep such a large number of people you know, against their will and keep them quiet? So that was his excuse. But the thing is, they're not keeping them quiet, because there is testimony and families are hearing from their loved ones. And, you know, the stories are coming out. Human Rights Watch has done a report on it. So there is a growing body of evidence about this filtration process. And the UN Human Rights Office said that they have verified cases, you know, of people being subjected to body searches and interrogations, and their fingerprints taken, their photographs taken, their mobile devices examined because the Russians want to know who they're speaking to. So the UN has corroborated some of these accounts.
Do we have any idea of what may be next for the Council? I mean, the United Nations General Assembly is just around the corner. But with Russia having a permanent seat on the Council and veto ability, is there anything that is likely to come out of these meetings?
No, it's a lot of finger pointing and such. There's been no concrete positive action in the Council because of the veto situation. This week alone, there'll have been three meetings on Ukraine by the end of today. We had a briefing about the nuclear power plant, and yesterday the meeting about the filtration, and the Russians have asked for a meeting today about Western arms that are being sent to the Ukrainians. They want a meeting about this. So, a lot of tit for tat in the Security Council, really, which is unfortunate because the Council is, you know, it hurts its own credibility when the most powerful body in the UN can't do anything to stop this war. And that's the Council's, you know, raison d'etre. It's supposed to be the body that maintains international peace and security. And they failed miserably these last 6 months in doing that.
VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir. And finally, the owners of Ukraine's wineries are trying to survive the war, which has hit winemakers on several fronts, with consumption down 20% and exports shriveling. Reuters' Ed Baran rounds us out.
6 months after a rocket landed in his vineyard in southern Ukraine in the first weeks of Russia's invasion, Georgi Molchanov is now harvesting his grapes and wondering what to name this year's unforgettable vintage.
We want to make signification of this wine. This was special year, so it also need to make some name of this to show this that was not easy year for us.
Molchanov, like other craft winemakers and larger enterprises across Ukraine, says he's determined to keep producing wine despite adversity. An hour's drive to the southwest, in a largely abandoned Black Sea resort, the much larger Kableva winery had Russian paratroopers landing in its fields. The company began labeling some bottles of wine, "We are from Ukraine," and sent a portion of sales to the army, says director Vitaly Rybyshapko.
"We can't make any plans because there's too many factors that we can't influence. So we do what we can today, and we try to help our country and our armed forces."
The war, which Russia calls a special military operation, has hit winemakers on several fronts. Ukraine banned the sale of alcohol during the first 2 months of the war. Exports, a key source of revenue for larger wineries, have shriveled due to the blockade of Ukraine's Black Sea ports. Consumption of wine has fallen 20% since before the war, the company says. Sparkling wine sales are down by half because of a lack of parties and reasons to celebrate. Despite that, winemaker Tatiana Matveeva says she pours her love for her country into the wine she makes.
"In such circumstances, one has to look for positive moments and emotions that will bring happiness, because a person has only one life to live. So one has to value every moment and even every insignificant event that brings positive emotions. This is the reason we make our wine, so its taste and fragrance can help people live on, reminding them that life is not over."
Ed Baran of Reuters News. And that's going to do it for us today. Be sure to stay up to date with all the latest developments, not only in Ukraine, but on news and events around the world. You can do so 24 hours a day at voanews.com, as well as on our social media feeds. Just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.